Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I'm back. Took some time off last week, made my annual pilgrimage to the horse racing at Saratoga upstate, made some money, swam in the Hudson, rode a bike. Actually, you know that old saying, it's like riding a bicycle, you never forget how? Well, this was the first time I was on a bike in like 20 years, and it was hard. I mean, I actually felt like I did forget how to ride a bike. Anyway, I came home last night, tried to dive right back into the whole music thing with the Video Music Awards. Now, I'm not saying that in 1 week I forgot how to listen to music, just that I felt, you know, a step behind. Fortunately, I'm up to speed today and ready to talk about drugs and betrayal and murder, all of which we will discuss with Dave Porter, who does the music for the hit TV series Breaking Bad. And we have live music from singer and guitarist Brett Denon. But back to last night's VMAs. There is a full recap on the Soundcheck blog at soundcheck.org, but after spending a week basically unplugged, this was the first thing I heard and saw when I turned on the TV. That is Lady Gaga kicking things off last night at MTV's Video Music Awards with her new song, Applause, her first new material since 2011's Born This Way, and the latest chapter in one of pop music's most unusual stories. Brendan J. Sullivan knows that story well, and especially all the chapters that came before. In 2006, Brendan was an up-and-coming DJ and writer when he met a go-go dancer and aspiring musician named Stephanie Germanotta. He tells the story of their friendship, her transformation into Lady Gaga, and the New York neighborhood where it all happened. His new book is called Rivington Was Ours, Lady Gaga, the Lower East Side, and the Prime of Our Lives. Brendan Sullivan, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Did you watch the VMAs? Did you see the new song?
I did last night, and I was transfixed. I thought it was fantastic.
Is she still the nascent Lady Gaga that you knew all those years ago?
You know, I put a lot of faith in her when she was younger, but I've just never seen someone take off the way she has.
So you actually sort of refer to her early in your book as a performance artist. And
yes,
that, more than anything else, seems to define who Lady Gaga is now. Now, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, the title of your book, Rivington Was Ours. Rivington is street on the Lower East Side, where a lot of the little clubs were that you were DJing at, and she was, you know, sort of trying to get her career going. How different is the Lower East Side? I mean, it's a past tense. Rivington was ours. Mm. It was only 7 years ago. How much has changed?
When you live in any neighborhood, really wherever you live, you're sort of the expert on it, and you go every day, and you will know if someone on your block is building a new porch or an addition or a new restaurant's coming in. It's kind of exciting, and the Lower East Side has changed, and all of New York has changed in the last 7 years. But what it really shows is you don't watch these places disappear; you watch them become something else. And it's really the same way with people in your life, which is what I wanted to write about. You watch people turn into and surprise you and do things that you wouldn't have expected them to do. You know, there's no pinball trajectory.
But this sort of goes back to what we were just talking about. Were you surprised at the trajectory of Lady Gaga's career? Because it seems from day one, she kind of knew what she wanted.
She is by far the smartest and most driven person I've ever met. She used to have me over to her apartment in the Lower East Side. There were two sticks of furniture. The only glassware were these pint glasses that she had stolen from a nearby bar. And we would sit on the floor, play records, and drink red wine, the cheapest stuff we could afford. And she would tell me, you know, her master plan for taking over the music industry. And in that time, I also watched the music industry change. The time we're talking about here was the lowest number one selling record in recorded history, actually until this week with Miley. And it was the soundtrack to Dreamgirls. That was the best the music industry could come up with at the time. Hmm. Everybody was looking for a savior, and they didn't think it was going to be that dark-haired go-go dancer that they just met.
Right.
And she got dropped for her first record deal.
So you're hanging out in her apartment. You both are in kind of fraught relationships with other people.
Yes.
Which is also, I mean, there's the list of dramatis personae in the front of the book sort of gives you a clue of the different web of you know, relationships that will unfold over mm-hmm. the course of the book. But one of the stories that really strikes me is when you talk about the first time she played for you some of her early demos. Mm. And Paparazzi, which is the first song that most of us, I think, heard of hers as a fully formed song. What was that like?
I mean, it's astounding how surprisingly good and brilliant that very simple song is. She was explaining to me on that night, and I write about this in the book, she's explaining to me how her whole life she's been a star, and that it's kind of lonely at the top. You know, she's got the lead in the play. Her parents love her and support her very much. She was by far the head of her class. And it was until...
She's
20 years old right. at this time. And it was until she met a boyfriend that she had fell very much in love with and wrote a lot of very beautiful songs about, that she finally had a star in her life. The tension there, and this is Shakespeare here. The tension there is this boyfriend, the one thing is he just doesn't like pop music. So he doesn't have any respect for what she does. And so she has this goal, which is to write a song that will make him say, wow, you did great, kid. However, the harder she works on her music, the more the music is going to take her away from him. She's going to go to L.A. She's going to do a music video. We're going to have shows, and he can't make it, and things like that. And just that natural conflict and the fact that she still wanted, was willing to do it, tells you everything you need to know about what drives that brilliant young woman.
So this was an early example of Lady Gaga. It would appear on her album, The Fame. The song is Paparazzi. Lady Gaga's Paparazzi from her 2008 album, The Fame, and a song about her desire for fame, but also, as Brendan J. Sullivan was just telling us, about her boyfriend Guy, who was a heavy metal guy, right?
I mean, yeah.
So this is her attempt to kind of build some sort of musical bridge to her boyfriend. Brendan's book is called Rivington Was Ours, Lady Gaga, The Lower East Side, and The Prime of Our Lives. Was this the prime of your life? I mean, you were doing this crazy schedule of DJing in all these different places.
The reason where the prime of our lives comes in is there's a feeling you get when you're that young where one person can be your whole world and you're in the prime. And when you're a prime, you're like a prime number. You're divisible by one and yourself. And that's why you say at that age, you say, I think I've met the one. And they're the one that can hurt you the most, mm-hmm. love you the most, mm-hmm. and just... they're your whole world. If they disappear, you'd just be destroyed.
You actually use almost those exact words to describe your girlfriend, Nikki, at the time. As
yeah.
the one, you know,
yeah.
divisible by one. Do you keep in touch with Lady Gaga? I mean, would she look back at this and say, yeah, those were the good old days?
Oh, that's an interesting question, actually. You know, I felt like I had a responsibility. I was, in some regards, we were sort of kids then. We were just screwing around. We were going out all night and partying. And here I had left a job at a newspaper. I was a trained reporter. I always wanted to be a writer. And I just wanted to have a job at night. And I fell in love with DJing and doing this whole party scene. But then all of a sudden, Gaga becomes big. And I got to go from the very bottom to I'm in music videos, I'm on TV with her, all this stuff. And there's always this element when people say, whenever she has a new record come out, somebody comes out of the woodwork and says, oh, you know what? You worked with her. You must have some stuff you can tell us about her. It's never the stuff you would choose to be printed. I explain Paparazzi, and it takes me 5 minutes to explain it. It's a 3.5-minute song. And they only print, I mean, this is a reason not to read your press. They only print the dirt. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you spent an hour and a half trying to trash talk the people you used to hang out with. And I found this story so personally inspiring. It inspired me to keep working. And now that the book is out, I can't, you know, it's done. It's gone. But now I realize that through working with Gaga, I realize that we're in the business of creating the world that we want to live in. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I had the chance to write the inspiring story the way I wanted it written, in my own words. And I could write about what it means to be young the way I could only understand in rock and roll songs and things like that.
Is that why each chapter is titled or headed by a quote from lyrics?
Yes. I mean, if you nuts and bolts wise, at the time I thought I was going to be this playwright and that I was going to be when you're 22, you got nothing.
Right.
So I was hoping that someone would be like, wow, this 22-year-old playwright, he's really got it going on. And the play never came out. I rewrote Romeo and Juliet from the perspective of Romeo's friend Mercutio. Mm-hmm. Never happened. We'd had one reading of it, a script through. So when I turned around and realized that, why am I writing about Verona in the 13th century when I have been there? And so I wanted to make this book the play that never got to happen. That's why each chapter is divided by scene. There's a dramatis personae in the beginning. And I wanted it to feel like you were going on a journey in this whole time.
Well, certainly, you know, you go on a literal journey, starting off as Gaga's sort of confidant. You know, she plays those early tapes for you, writes a song, you know, about that night that you and she were at, was it Motor City, where you did the Killers after party?
You know, when I was a kid, I had no friends, but I would listen to the radio. And I would pretend that the Beach Boys were my best friends, or that Chuck Berry and I wrote all the songs about hanging out, or that Madonna was singing about our breakup. You know, it was just really pathetic. And then, but one day I turn around and I'm 24. All my friends are musicians. They're all working. We're all working together. None of them are writing anything particularly about our world or our scene. And then one does. And I was just like blown away. I was like, you know, I'm not here. I think this is just my part-time job at night, but this is the world we're creating here. And her songs, there's like a little story to a lot of them. They're very intricate, but yet, you know, my niece and nephew can sing along, have been singing along to them their entire lives.
Right.
Since they're very young.
She tells you early on in the book that she's written a song about this party that you DJ after a concert by the Killers at Madison Square Garden. But it isn't until like two-thirds of the way through the book that you finally get to hear the song. And it is this song by Lady Gaga called Boys, Boys, Boys.
Sneakers. Let's go see the Killers and make out in the bleachers. I like you a lot, lot. Think you're really hot, hot. Let's go to the party. Heard our buddies the DJ. Don't forget my lipstick. I left it in your ashtray. I like you a lot, lot. All we want is hot, hot. Boys, boys, boys.
Like boys in cars.
Boys, boys, boys.
Buy us drinks in bars.
Lady Gaga's song Boys, 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 also from that 2008 record, The Fame, about her night with my guest, the author Brendan J. Sullivan, DJing an after party at Motor City, the club on the Lower East Side, recently closed. Mm-hmm. And, Brendan's book is called Rivington Was Ours, Lady Gaga, the Lower East Side, and the Prime of Our Lives. You were DJing as DJ VH1. Now, last night, Lady Gaga's on MTV. You're here, not with her. I mean, you mm-hmm. started as her DJ. You're in some of the music videos.
You know, there was a time when the two of us were the entire show. Mm-hmm. Just on stage, we added two backup dancers with the goal of all being able to fit in the same cab because we had no money.
But then you write about Just Dance. I mean, you mentioned this video before.
Yeah, that was a great time.
Right, but this is also at the time where you're learning that she's basically going to let you go as her DJ,
yeah.
Right? It was all unfolding around the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what... I mean, was this an amicable parting?
Oh, I see what you're saying. It would be a cool story if we, like, it, you know, because we're so young at the time, and the biggest drama in our lives were breakups. You know, Nikki and I, Gaga had her own flare-ups with another guy. They were dramatic because they were the prime of your life dramatic. You were destroyed when they happened. That wasn't the way that Gaga and I ended things, though.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't working with her. It was the adventure of a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody else's life, maybe.
Well, in the video for Just Dance, there is a DJ, but the DJ isn't you. You're like riding a flamingo or pogoing and doing everything
That was my big Hollywood debut because, and keep in mind, you know, here's my character's motivation for going there. I've written a play and I want it to be made into a movie. I go to L.A. because Gaga says we're doing a video and I was like, oh, I want to meet film people. I'm in. Let's go. And at the same time, when Nikki and I broke up, she started dating a guy who looked exactly like me. And you have this moment where you know, Nikki's a very wonderful, talented lingerie designer starting her own line. Very beautiful girl. All the magazines that featured her designs also featured photos of her. That she's easy on the eyes. But when she started dating another guy who looked like me, I was like, you know, listen, lady, if you're into nerdy boys, I'm your guy right here, you know? And it hurt more because you don't say, oh, of course, Nikki wants this guy. He's richer. He's whatever.
So that one hurt more than the Lady Gaga.
There was no hurt with Lady Gaga. Yeah. With Nikki. But what was hilarious is that moment when I realized I had grown up a little in that year.
Hmm.
Because I looked at this guy. They had a different guy, a guy from the major record label from L.A., and he's wearing the same, you know, three-piece suit that I would have worn and the same sunglasses. And I was like, wow, like, if you want a guy to do that, I'm right here, you know?
Yeah, right.
And then you go, I don't care.
I get to ride a flamingo and pogo with
Lady
Gaga.
I'm on my way to my big moment in Hollywood. And I have to ride a plastic flamingo. I'm dancing on a table. Yeah.
What you do for your art, Brendan.
Which, yeah.
Brendan, you can see him still in the video for this song by Lady Gaga called Just Dance. Just Dance is the song from Lady Gaga. Check out the video online and you'll see our guest, Brendan J. Sullivan, as one of the featured players. And
The book is called Rivington Was Ours, Lady Gaga, The Lower East Side, and the Prime of Our Lives. Brendan, it is your story. It is Gaga's story. But there's something kind of universal about it as well. People who read the
Thank
Patti
you.
Smith book, Just Kids, will sort of hear echoes from, you know,
yeah.
this artists learning how to be artists. Brendan J. Sullivan, DJ VH1. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot. This was fun.
Coming up in a moment, we'll speak with Dave Porter, the composer behind the music on the acclaimed TV drama Breaking Bad, and live music in our studio by the singer-songwriter Brett Denon. By the way, all this week you can listen to all of our shows webcast live at 2 p.m. on soundcheck.org. Tomorrow, a conversation with country and bluegrass artist Ricky Skaggs about his new memoir. Plus, the New York gypsy punk band Gogol Bordello will bring its gonzo music to our studio for a live performance. All of that starts at 2 p.m. live here at soundcheck.org or on the air tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Here's a track from Gogol Bordello's new album, Por A Vida Conspiracy. It's called Lost Innocent World.
Hey, rejuvenation, the second wind. When will it begin? Repatriation, what is my sin? When will my ship come in? First I ask the sailor to sneak me aboard. Bring me place my father showed me my first guitar chord. Place where a lie of second thought cannot survive. Place where all my friends are.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and for many of you out there, I'm sure this is the sweet sound of meth labs, money, and murder. It is the theme music for the hit AMC drama Breaking Bad, the story of a mild-mannered science teacher turned drug kingpin, which wraps up this fall after 5 seasons on the air. Composer Dave Porter wrote this theme and the show's original score. He's on the line with us from L.A. Hi, Dave.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you with us. I mentioned that, you know, our main character, Walter White, who's played by Bryan Cranston, you know, he starts as a mild-mannered science teacher. He ends up as this kind of ruthless drug kingpin. All of the while, he's, you know, terminally ill with cancer. So were you thinking, when you wrote that theme music, were you thinking of Walter down the road? I mean, this is not the sound of a, you know, kind of high school science teacher that everybody likes.
Exactly right. The one thing I did know in talking to Vince Gilligan, the executive producer and creator of the show, and his oft-quoted line is that this is the story of taking this character of Walter White from Mr. Chips to Scarface. and one thing we definitely wanted to do in the theme music for the show was give that forward picture, that glimpse of where this story was going, so that perhaps in the first season it almost feels jarring or out of place. But hopefully by now, as we're in the final season, it makes a lot more sense.
Right. Now, the show has become sort of known for musical restraint. You know, you're not splashing huge swaths of music throughout each episode of the show. It seems like, you know, where and when and how music is used has to be very kind of carefully thought about and applied. Is that, in fact, how it works?
It is absolutely how it works, and we spend an awful lot of time discussing where music should go and, equally importantly, where music should not go. And we have what's called a spotting session before I start work on any particular episode that sometimes lasts 5 and 6 hours, where we'll sit and watch every scene of the upcoming episode one at a time and talk not just about music but also about sound in general and what kind of effect sound and music are going to have, what role they can play, how they can best serve the story. And on a show of this quality, I'm so blessed to be a small part of it, there's often really nothing that music can add that hasn't already been wonderfully accomplished by the writing and the acting, which allows me to not have to worry or spend a lot of time putting music in scenes where music isn't going to be that relevant, but concentrate on the moments where it can truly be impactful.
Huh. So have you found yourself as the composer actually saying to Vince Gilligan or the rest of the crew, you know, I don't think I need to do anything here?
All the time, at the risk of sounding lazy, which I'm not. But I am a big advocate of using music sparingly, or I guess better said, where it's going to have the most impact.
One example of when you did decide to use music to very effective and creepy use is the dramatic scene at the end of the Crawl Space episode in season 4. Listen to this. This is some of Dave Porter's music for the Emmy Award-winning AMC series Breaking Bad.
What did that phone call mean?
Where is it? Where's the rest? The money, Skyler. Where is the rest? Skyler, where is the money?
I gave it to Ted.
What? You did what?
Walt, I had to. For us, for the family. I swear, Walt.
You gave our money to Bennett.
Walt, please, please just hear me out, please.
That is just a little bit from season 4. I hope that didn't spoil anything for anybody who hasn't gotten up to season 4 yet. From Breaking Bad, currently in its 5th and final season and wrapping up at the end of September. The show airs on AMC Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern with music by my guest Dave Porter. Now, Dave, in that scene, when the obvious and ominous music suddenly cuts out, it is replaced by this kind of thudding sound, which for a few seconds, you're not sure whether you're hearing music or, you know, an evocation of Walter's heartbeat or... You know, it seems like the line between score and sound design gets a little intentionally blurred there.
Very much so, and we do that a lot. And one of the reasons why we have these meetings that include not just myself but the sound team is so that we can pass these ideas back and forth to each other, and so we don't step in each other's way. But I knew from that moment that I first saw it that there had to be this enormous amount of dread.
Now, there's another good example of you mixing sounds together in the theme that accompanies Walter, our main character, when he mm-hmm. literally becomes his villainous, you know, puts on the black hat, you know, the sort of international signal for bad guy, and becomes his villainous alias Heisenberg. This is it's a Japanese koto, right? The long stick zither that you've highly processed.
Exactly. Yes, I studied in Japan when I was in school, and brought this home with me many years ago. And what I love about it is that it has a twangy mm-hmm. quality mm-hmm. that relates in some way to the resonator guitar from the theme, and also has that a little bit of that Southwest Americana to it, even though it's Japanese, and it's very tunable to be into a Western scale.
Well, this is what resulted. This is Heisenberg's theme from Dave Porter's score to the TV series Breaking Bad. Thank you.
some of Dave Porter's score to Breaking Bad, the Emmy Award-winning AMC television series starring Bryan Cranston as Walter White, cancer-riddled high school teacher, science teacher turned drug kingpin. How often do you reuse themes, Dave, in terms of, you know, does whenever he's Heisenberg, do you hear that music?
Not every time, more often than not, I would say. But in truth, it doesn't come around that often.
Right.
I think over the course of 5 or 6 years of doing the show, I've probably used that 4 or 5 times.
Yeah. What about the idea of, you know, is almost a Wagnerian idea that some composers use, where each character has a, you know, a theme, a leitmotif. I know Michael Giacchino did that with Lost, where, you know, there was a theme for the island and a theme for each of the main characters and stuff. Do you approach this show that way, where the music is so sparse?
I don't, actually. Not that there's anything wrong with that approach, but I think for Breaking Bad it would have been the wrong choice, in part because, by definition, what's happening in Breaking Bad is the consistent and constant evolution of these characters.
Mm.
And they're very, very different from season 1 to season 4 or 5. And I just didn't want to pin myself down creatively to a theme that would have been hard to make fit later on.
But at the end of each episode, you do offer us a kind of variation on your opening theme, right?
I do, and actually in some of the same ways, it helps me set the tone that you feel after you watch the episode. And because every episode is so different, when we originally tried to just put in the main theme again after the show ended, like many shows do, it just felt wrong more often than not. So it gave me a clever opportunity to create a new version of our theme each week that leaves you either thinking about something that happened in the episode you just aired, or perhaps anticipating something that's going to come next week.
Now, in terms of anticipating things, I know you can't give anything away, but, you know, I was just speaking with the author Brendan Sullivan about his book about Lady Gaga's early years, and before we went on the air, he said, you know, if I talk to Dave Porter, I can get him to reveal something about the ending. And I said, how? He said, I'll just ask him what key he's working in. So, Dave, let me ask you, as you head towards the end, what key are you working in?
I could give you the Spinal Tap answer, which would be D minor.
So you're not going to give me like a Mozartian G minor or something like that?
No. And in fact, I work in a lot of modes, and a lot of what I do is by design, not even necessarily in a key. But I will tell you that, you know, one of the great things about working on a TV show that you know is coming to its end, there's no chance that this is going to be renewed again or whatever, that gives me the opportunity, just like it gave the script writers an opportunity to bring all of my musical ideas and the musical journey that I've gone on these last 5-6 years to a nice logical conclusion.
And since you wrote that opening theme before, you know, the complete arc of the narrative had been sketched out, what are you thinking for the end? Would you simply come back to the original theme, since that was its intent all those years ago?
I wouldn't speculate one way or another.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm sorry.
Well evaded, well evaded there, Dave.
Wouldn't be fair.
We're speaking with Dave Porter. He is the composer behind AMC's Breaking Bad. The show airs Sunday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern on AMC, currently in its 5th and final season. And Dave, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
I really appreciate it, John. Enjoy the final episodes.
Thanks. Here's an example of some of the show's end credits, some of the music of Dave Porter. Coming up, the L.A.-based singer-songwriter Brett Denon just finished recording a new album in Nashville. It won't come out till October, but he's here to give us a sneak preview of some of his new songs in just a moment. This is Soundcheck.
If you wanna leave, but I won't be here when you come home. I'm gonna move to San Francisco, look up some old friends. I'm gonna give me an 80 Pico and an old Mercedes Benz.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Singer-songwriter Brett Denon first caught our attention here in the Soundcheck offices with this 2008 song called San Francisco. It is at once a great breakup song and a kind of exhaustive list of all the fun you can have in San Francisco's various neighborhoods. You've got a spurned lover promising to move to the city and live a fuller life in Haight-Ashbury, Hayes Valley, the Mission District, the Tenderloin, etc. Well, Brett Denon is spending the next few days here in New York, and we're going to make him have some fun while he's here. He's going to play some songs from his upcoming record called Smoke and Mirrors. This is the new single called Wild Child from Brett Denon, live on Soundcheck.
I am a wild child, yes, I am. I love the country and I wanna run free, and I don't wanna live up to anyone's plans. I wanna feel the good vibes, and I wanna feel the sunshine with you by my side. I am a wild You can hold me tight if you wanna. If you wanna hold me tonight. Take me where the music's playing. Get me on the dance floor, you know. Pull me a little closer in the. I am a wild child, yes I am. I wanna feel the good vibes, and I wanna feel the sunshine with you by my side. I am.
That is Brett Denon, live on Soundcheck, singing, playing guitar, and that's the new single from his forthcoming record, Smoke and Mirrors, which isn't out till October 22nd, although it's available for pre-order on iTunes, and we're hearing some of it live in the Soundcheck studio today. Wild Child is the name of that. Brett, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, that's, if you told me that that was not your new song, but something that would was written in the 60s or 70s that you had discovered, I would have completely bought that.
Wow, that's great. It's not the first time I've heard that. Yeah. I've gotten a lot of people say it's reminiscent of, like, Steve Miller or and Tom Petty or my girlfriend says Van Morrison. And those are all people that I'm influenced by anyway, so... It's definitely a compliment. It feels weird saying it out loud, you know, myself. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It feels, to me, it actually feels like an old song for me. Like a song I maybe would have, this is my fifth record. So this feels more like a song I would have written for my first record. Even though my first record was very different than that song. But to me, thematically, I think, it's kind of like a, here I am introducing myself to the world sort of song. Yeah. You know, the kind of song, I guess the kind of song you write when you're younger.
Yeah. Does it have anything to do with the place where the songs were written or recorded, which they were two very different places, weren't they?
Yeah, well, the record was recorded in Nashville, but the bigger story behind the record is it was written in the mountains near where I grew up.
In the Sierra Nevadas?
In the Sierra Nevada, yeah. Where I spent summers as a kid, backpacking and camping with my family and working at a summer camp. And the outdoors was one of my first loves. Mm-hmm. And I was actually homeschooled, so we spent a lot of time outside. And becoming a musician and, you know, music sort of takes over your life and the road takes over your life. And I always sort of felt the inspiration from nature, and as whenever I could, I'd get back and go for some backpacking trips or whatever, but never really a substantial amount of time until it was time to write this record. And it also came at a time where I was ready to take a break from the road. Up until that point, I'd been touring pretty nonstop for quite a few years, and so the timing for everything was just right for me to get some new inspiration, which is actually some old inspiration.
Is it funny how that worked out? Yeah.
Yeah, and then to take some actual real time off the road and just remind myself who I am, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of what the song really is about, just remembering who you are.
So written in the high plains there in the Sierra Nevadas, and then recorded in Nashville.
And then, and then the other half of the story was, which was also a change for me, is recording in Nashville.
And why did you
make
that?
It's not that original because people are doing it more and more and more. Well, first of all, it's a lot cheaper. The industry there is so strong. There's so many great players and producers and studios, but that's not the real reason that I recorded there. The real reason I recorded there was to work with a guy named Charlie Peacock, who is a producer and has...
Noted producer, yeah.
Yeah, he did the Civil Wars and... Yep. Lone Bellow and a bunch of other really great stuff, but his little operation is in Nashville, and it's really cool. He has a really cool thing going. He's got an old prairie chapel that he and his wife have turned into a house where they've raised their kids, and part of it's a studio, but the studio is also in the house, and it's just kind of this one artistic compound, if you will.
So it's not what people might think of as the Nashville music factory.
I've been going to Nashville to play shows, and I don't even know what that is that you're referring to. I mean, I think I do, because I've seen the show Nashville. But but from my experience in my time visiting Nashville, I haven't really ever been a part of that. I know it's there, but there's so much else, you know, more going on. There's a lot of rock music now being made in Nashville, and there's a lot of bands are moving there to break. You know, it's a place where they can live, and there's a great community. I mean, I live in Los Angeles for the most part, and there's tons of musicians there, but it's nothing like the community and the camaraderie that goes on in Nashville.
How different, I mean, you mentioned living in the L.A. area and growing up in Northern California. They're like two different states, aren't
they? It is. It's two completely different states. Mostly, you know, and they're both beautiful and they're both great and they both have nice people. But most of the time what people refer to California.
Career as a politician in front of you there, Brett.
Slowly trying to work on it, building it. They are different states, but most of the time when people refer to California, they refer to Southern California, the amazing weather. And But the California that I know, that I grew up in, geographically, it's actually in Central California, but, you know, we just say Northern California just to make it easier for people. But it's dry and flat and farmy.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in the San Joaquin Valley where most of the country's food comes from, and it's beautiful, but it's just there's no beach there. Mountains are close by, though.
Yeah, the mountains that produce this this forthcoming record called Smoke and Mirrors. We're speaking with Brett Denon, the singer, songwriter, guitarist. He's playing Thursday night at West Hampton Beach Performing Arts Center here in New York, and Friday up in Ridgefield, Connecticut at the Ridgefield Playhouse. Two big shows in November, Zankel Hall at Carnegie on November 2nd, and for our listeners at WDET in Detroit, he'll be playing at the Blind Pig in Ann Arbor on November 6th. On this next one, Only Want You, on the record, there's a woman singing along with you.
Yeah.
Who is that?
Her name is Ruby Amamfu, and I met her actually at the session. She's a good friend of Charlie Peacock, the producer. And from what I gather, she was born in Africa and then grew up in Nashville, and then I think she moved to the UK for a while to start a career there, and then ended up moving back, and she's been in several bands, has her own career, and sings on the side with Jack White. I think like an emerging star from what I gather in Nashville.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what the session was going to be like when she came in, but the minute she started singing, I knew it was going to be magical because our voices are unique enough and different enough that when they come together, there's a really special thing happens.
That's what struck me about it. Her voice very different from yours, but a lovely counterpoint to it. So.
Yeah, like in mine kind of sort of cuts and has a point on it where hers sort of just like spreads out like all over the place.
All right, well, folks will have to wait till October to hear that version of the song, but Brett's going to do a solo version for us here in the studio. It's called Only Want You. It's Brett Denon live on Soundcheck.
Listen to the river, does it make you wonder how anything could ever stand still? First lightning, then thunder, thunder. A kiss in the rain, love, feel the thrill. I only want you, I only want you. Want what we had. I only want you, I only want you. It's as simple as that. Run to the forest to find some shelter. Remember how we fell in love so sweet. You say watch your step, walk softer, softer. 'Cause dreams are growing below our feet. I only want you, I only want you. I want what we had. I only want you, I only want you. Can we get it back? I only want you, I only want you. I want what we had. I only want you, I only want you. It's as simple as that. yours is the best love. It's the best love. So pure and so true. Our love will lift us. Our love will lift us. Only love, my darling. Only you. When I do not feel inspired, I can only speak my heart. I'm sitting in the middle of a fire, fire, and I can't even catch a spark. I only want you, I only want you. I want what we had. I only want you, I only want you. Can we get it back? I only want you, I only want you. I want what we had. I only want you, I only want you. It's as simple as that.
Brett Denon live on Soundcheck with another new song called Only Want You that'll appear on the next record, Smoke and Mirrors, when it comes out on October 22nd. But Brett is giving us a bit of a preview here in the Soundcheck studio today. Once again, performing Thursday at the West Hampton Beach Performing Arts Center out on Long Island. For those of you up in Connecticut, Friday night, Brett will be at the Ridgefield Playhouse in Ridgefield. November 2nd, Zenkel Hall at Carnegie Hall, and November 6th at the Blind Pig in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And you're also, in addition to all of the music stuff, you've done some fundraising for this camp, Jack Hazard.
Yeah.
Is that where you, when you mentioned before backpacking and camping up in the Sierra, was that the camp?
Yeah, that's the same. It's a camp that when I was a kid, it was run by the YMCA in Stanislaus County, and it's actually the same summer camp that my mom went to when she was a kid, and she actually worked at as an adult. So I started going there when I was 10, and that was right around the time I was really falling in love with, like, just the idea of being in the mountains all the time, and that allowed me to. And when I was 14, I started working there, and I became a camp counselor, and then I started leading wilderness trips and teaching, you know, younger teens how to be leaders themselves. And that's how I learned to play guitar, was up there, because there was like a little guitar culture going on, a bunch of long-haired counselors, you know.
Yeah, so for you, Neil music in the mountains, those loves grew up simultaneously.
Yeah, you know, like my first great feeling of playing music was strumming the guitar at the campfire and hearing all the kids sing along with me. That was like one of the first times that I think music ever really picked me up and shook me around.
What's the altitude there?
Almost 7,000.
7,000
feet?
Yeah,
it's about 6,500 to 7,000. But then,
so
what
then
you do
come
is
down
you
to
go,
New York,
well, you
and you feel like Superman,
yeah,
right?
You get to be an altitude snob, yeah, for sure. You're like, oh, it's easy to breathe down here. Try trying to pick up phone booths. There's no phone booths anymore.
No, there's no
fire hydrants.
Brett Denon, my guest on Soundcheck. We were talking just a few moments ago about the studio version of Only Want mm-hmm. You with this great singer, Ruby Amanfu.
Amanfu, yeah.
Why don't we give people a chance to hear a little bit of those two voices? We were talking about how different they
were. Yeah,
that'd
be great, yeah.
All right, so that's what we'll do.
Especially they didn't see, like, the hand signals that I did when I described the two voices. When I said mine's pointy, it was like a karate chop, and hers kind of fills out. That was like me, you know, spreading the dough.
Right. You know, doing the hand gestures for the second time on the radio is going to work just as well as it did the first. Got to tell you that,
exactly.
Brett. It's been great having you with us
on
Soundcheck.
Thank you. It's been great.
Here's the song Only Want You from the forthcoming record Smoke and Mirrors.
Because dreams are growing below our feet. I only want you. I only want you. I want what we have. Back. I only want you, I only want you.
Tomorrow on Soundcheck, a conversation with the Grammy Award-winning mandolinist, violinist, guitarist, and singer Ricky Skaggs. He'll talk about his family's long Southern lineage, his prodigious childhood in music, and his new memoir called Kentucky Traveler, My Life in Music. Plus, gypsy punk rockers Gogol Bordello join us to play songs from their new album called Pura Vida Conspiracy. That does it for today's show. Remember, all this week you can hear our programs webcast live at 2 p.m. on soundcheck.org. Slap on a pair of headphones, listen at your desk, and your boss will never know. Or check us out on the air right here, 9 p.m. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.